And now, everyone's favorite autodidactic iconoclast, Drew Marshall.
Can you put your hands in your head? Oh no, I said dreamer, nothing but a dreamer. Can you put your hands in your head? Oh no.
Well, the great-grandson of Scientology creator L. Ron Hubbard, Jamie DeWolf, he's an outspoken critic of the church. Duh. He's been interviewed by Inside Edition, The Young Turks, CBS, BBC, and NBC, and he was the first host of the first ever Anti-Scientology Summit in Clearwater, Florida. That's ironic. And was a keynote speaker at the first international conference in Dublin. In Dublin? Dublin, Ireland? Am I doing that right, Tim?
Yes. No, the northern accent is more, you know, sad-sounding.
We're taking too long.
The southern's a little more happy and cheery.
Anyway, his live NPR performance about his lineage entitled The God and the Man was awarded Snap Judgment's Performance of the Year and quickly became a viral hit, and that's how I found out about this guy, garnering national press from The Village Voice, The Washington Post, and The Huffington Post. And according to Jamie, apparently, quote-unquote, Scientology is the most brilliantly engineered pyramid scam I've ever seen. L. Ron Hubbard, you know, can never say that he was an idiot by any means. He was very intelligent, very sort of evil, malicious, a sort of overman, and his will against the world. Here's a website you want to check out, jamiedewolf.com, and he joins us now on the Drew Marshall Show. Jamie, that Snap Judgment thing was freaking amazing, but that was a few years ago, right? It made a resurgence.
Yeah, it actually originally was performed 2 years ago, I believe, and then Upworthy actually reposted it, and then it went totally wild again, which has been awesome because I'm actually a little more prepared this time, and I'm not as terrified. the first time it came out, I was literally like checking my brakes every morning, and I mean, I told him, I was like, you have to tell me the day this comes out. And I was incredibly wary. I had no idea how the church was going to respond, what was going to happen that was going to be different. The church has known who I am, obviously, for a long time. But I, you know, just in terms of the public consciousness, I hadn't been doing performances in particular against it. If people would ask me about it, I would, you know, completely tell them about it and be forthright. But it wasn't something that I had, like, been creating, you know, art about. And yeah, it just went completely insane when it came out again, and it's just been really nuts the past like 2 weeks. So.
Yeah. Well, listen, I'm stoked you're on the show for a number of reasons. I've got a lot of questions for you. The first thing that I want to talk about, though, is, you know, I've always said that a sign that you're in the wrong group is when you decide to leave the group, how that group treats you.
Mm.
And I don't think I've come across a worser group. Real word, that treats their people as scarily as your family's gang.
Absolutely. I mean, if you leave Christianity, people are going to condemn you. They can tell you you're going to go to hell, but they usually don't send like a secret police force after you. And generally, what Scientology was engineered to basically destroy all of its critics and opposition, probably because it's in its DNA. Because of L. Ron Hubbard, because he basically had to create an entire army around him to protect all of his lies, to protect all of his, you know, all of his money and his holdings, and to be able to escape from kind of an outlaw status going from place to place. But the paranoia of Scientology is definitely a part of it, and it's pretty intrinsic to the cult's kind of makeup in general, and the way that they view the world, the way that they view that they're sort of in a constant war. However, there's a lot of Cold War paranoia and sort of spy craft that comes into a lot of it. So when they decide that they want to destroy somebody, they view it as like that any method is possible, that they can use lawsuits, they can use private investigators, they can use blackmail, they can come after you with just straight-up harassment, calling all your neighbors and telling them that you've been released for a sexual molestation conviction. Going through your mail, trying to hack into your email. I mean, it's kind of nonstop. It's just like dealing with an empire of ex-girlfriends, basically. And They just deal with people in such a nasty way that that's part of the reason why I haven't even after I first performed about him in 1999, 2000, they came after me immediately. Like, they're on the front step of my house within 2 days that it had gone online. And then I went to Clearwater, Florida, and I saw the magnitude of just like that they had completely consumed this city, and that it was just like the sort of cult Disneyland. And I realized that that wasn't all I wanted to do with my life. That there was a lot. I just saw basically that if you spoke out against them, that they completely would consume you in a never ending battle. Because then they'll fight absolute to the teeth and to the death. And I think some of that has changed in the last 10 years because of the fact of South Park satire, because of Anonymous in particular. When they started to realize that they couldn't control the internet, they couldn't stop
exactly.
every single leak.
And that's what I was going to ask you was, surely they are not hassling ex-members as much as a result of this world that we now live in where you can film anything and post it and there it is.
Right. Well, that's a huge, huge part of it. But I mean, their level of stalking people is like just absolutely like mind blowing. I mean, they have Marty Rathburn, who's this guy who used to be like the number two or three guy in the Church of Scientology, and he left.
We've had a number of ex-members on the show, and the stories are just incredible. Now, however, you've also got to take it with a grain of salt. Any ex-member, right? Any ex-member of anything, you got to kind of go, well, you know, maybe they're just bitter, maybe they're just vindictive.
Right. Exactly. I mean, that's how that they deal with their opposition in a way that like Marty Rathbun, they have private investigators who literally lived across his house and put his house under surveillance for like 3 years. I mean, just like they just rented these guys a house to just film him every single day, go through his mail. I mean, that's just like another level that most people aren't ready to deal with. And I've gotten to a point where, especially I do a lot of performances and I'm on stage quite a bit and tour and travel a lot. So there's constant moments where I could be gotten to, it could be argued, but I sort of realized that I couldn't live my life in fear anymore. And also on a certain level that they need to be, that kind of behavior needs to stop. Mm-hmm. You know, if someone wants to disagree with your theology, that's fine. You can go your own separate ways. But if someone's going to come after you like Nixon's cabinet in the 70s, then that needs to stop. That needs to end. And that needs to come to light so people know.
On the phone with Jamie DeWolfe, the website is jamiedewolfe.com. Jamie, you know, you're the great grandson. Here's the sort of, I can imagine the critics saying, so? The great grandson of L. Ron Hubbard. I mean, you were never really a Scientologist, even though you kind of, you know, sort of signed up for the program. We'll talk about that in a second. But you're never really a Scientologist. You're like, you know, way removed from L. Ron. You know, so people are going to say, you know, Jamie, why should we care about really what you have to say about Scientologists?
They don't have to. They don't have to care at all, except the fact that I'm pretty much living evidence that he was something else than he said he was. And partly is that I'm the grandson of L. Ron Jr., who went against his father for many, many years and then was ultimately destroyed by his father in silence and snuffed out. Basically had to sign away his own testimonies near the end of his life. And people, I encourage everybody to investigate for themselves. I'm certainly not doing it out of milking it in any way. It's just like, it's just literally, I did a performance about, I lived in fear for decades of ever even speaking about my own family. And then I reached to a point where I realized that the story might end with me, that it might die with me. There's no one else in my family that'll talk about it because of what it did to our grandfather, to their father, L. Ron Hubbard Jr., that none of them will go on record. They don't even want to discuss it.
Right.
And so I realized that it was going to basically end with me, that it's not up for my cousins or for my daughter to pick up the same narrative and expose it for what it was, and partly because it's also been a very formative part of my entire life.
Okay. Are there any family members that you have, Jamie, who are ticked at you for opening up your yap?
No, they're wary, though. Some of them have talked to me privately and have expressed concern. When I first spoke out about them, they didn't want to have anything to do with it. They basically said, don't ever mention me. Don't ever talk about me. Don't bring up our family in any way, because they've been trying to escape this in their entire life. And I think more than anything, that's why I've come out and said it, is that this is just a man. This is not a man or a myth or, you know, a legend. This is just a guy, and he created this entire larger-than-life persona. But the story that he wanted to hide was the story of him and his son and my family in general. And they've tried to bury that over the years, and so that's part of the reason why I speak out at all.
Okay.
Also is that, it really informs a lot of what I do performance-wise to be related to someone who's basically a con man and a hustler, and part of me has to respect that as well.
Yeah, totally. Totally, I get that. Okay, let me throw this out at you, Jamie. I was invited, I guess was it 3 years ago now, to attend L. Ron's 100th birthday party by the president of Scientology Canada. And
wow.
And so I went, because I thought that's a lovely invite, a lovely thought, you know. And I understand that it's like any organization, you know, if there's people with microphones or television cameras that have an audience, you want to get them to understand and that you are a normal group of people and you're celebrating something and everything, you know. So I get the relationship there. And besides, Yvette Shank was her name. She's the president of Scientology Canada. What a lovely lady. What a really, really lovely lady. As a matter of fact, when I was trying to find accommodation for girls who were smuggled into the sex trade here in Canada and were busted, the cops busted this ring and they needed to find emergency accommodation for these girls because they bust them out of the Korean mob were running these girls. Yvette tried her hardest to try to find accommodation for these girls. So I went to this thing. Aside from it being really, really long and I wasn't there for all of it, and I find anything I have to sit in that has nothing to do with me boring. It was interesting, but I wasn't offended. I wasn't freaked out. Nobody tried to get me to hold onto a tin can with strings or, you know, it was all fine. But I think what you're trying to get people to understand is that it's not fine. So help me, like, freak me out, man. Why should I, are you saying I shouldn't have a friendship or a relationship with Yvette Shank, the president of Scientology Canada?
No, it's that it has nothing to do with a lot of the structure of the actual people who are involved. I think that Scientologists in general, especially on a lower level, a lot of them are good-natured people. They got involved because they want to better themselves. They have a sense of trying to, you know, become a more enhanced version of their spiritual self. That's a lot of what they're selling you in the earliest steps. However, I don't think any religion is necessary in order to treat people to be nice to each other and compassionate and not hit someone in the face with a brick or anything like that. I mean, that's often used as a justification for any religion.
Yeah.
However, the salvation in Scientology costs hundreds of thousands of dollars, and it's a level of secrecy. If you were to ask, what do Scientologists believe, she would not tell you the accuracy of where it all takes you in the levels. They wouldn't tell you about Xenu. They wouldn't tell you that at a certain point you're systematically brainwashed to a point that you're paying hundreds of thousands of dollars to sit and get therapy to the dead alien souls that possess your body. They don't tell you that.
Well, no, hold on. We did have a conversation on air about Thetans, about Xenon, about the whole kind of structure and where it came from. And she was quite open about that. But I think what you're saying is there are some aspects of the club that she's not going to divulge.
But that's the thing, is that they're not allowed to divulge it to their own members. So if you feel that you have this new religious technology that is going to save the planet literally from its own destruction, why does it cost so much money? Why do they have levels of secrecy that their lower members cannot find out about until they've paid thousands and thousands of dollars and have completely sort of rewired their own mental circuitry? That's a big part of it. Not to mention that if your every single aspect of Scientology comes from the mouth and mind of one guy, which is why they call him the source, because everything comes from L. Ron Hubbard, and you cannot, it's written within the DNA of the theology that you cannot change it or alter it in any way.
Right.
And that man has proven to be a compulsive, pathological liar. Well, everything needs to come into question. It doesn't mean that some Scientologists are not nice people. It doesn't mean that they don't give the charities or, you know what I mean, that they hit their kids. It doesn't mean any of that.
Right.
It simply means the entire structure of it is based upon a sham, and also that they're being disingenuous and they're not telling you in what they believe fully and how they deal with their critics and their opponents.
Okay.
That's the thing. I mean, I'm, I question everything. People should investigate it for themselves. The problem is that for three decades before the internet, people could not find out any of this stuff on their own. You had to systematically, you know, dismantle your brain on this journey to learn any of it.
Okay, here's another tidbit of information. And by the way, folks, you're listening to the Drew Marshall Show. We're on the phone with Jamie DeWolf. He is the great-grandson of Scientology founder L. Ron Hubbard. And he's also an atheist, by the way. We'll talk about that in a second. By the way, well, no, let's talk about it right now, actually, because you know, we had Fred Phelps' son in the studio, Nate Phelps. Now, do you know who Fred Phelps is?
It sounds familiar. No, not right up to
okay,
that.
Okay, Fred Phelps is the guy behind GodHatesFags.com, the Westboro Baptist Church gang. Okay, protest funerals of soldiers and students killed in massacres.
Yes.
And, you know,
like yeah, I know who he is now, yeah.
So his son, Nate Phelps, is an atheist. There's a big duh. And for you to be an atheist is a big duh. I can't believe that, you know, all of your family members are not raging atheists. I can't believe all of your family members haven't drank copious amounts of whiskey with Hitchens.
Most of them are actually quite Christian. And I was raised to be pretty fanatically Christian. I was very dedicated and passionate Christian for many, many years. We passed out pamphlets on the street corner. Ooh. And, you know, I went to Christian summer camp, so they told us the rapture was happening on Saturday night, and we stood in the field waiting for Jesus to come down out of the sky. I mean, I was about as Christian as you could possibly get, and I felt that I had to deprogram myself from a much more collectively accepted cult/religion/theology that is woven through the history of, you know, of European countries, especially America. It's just like completely fused through our DNA.
Yeah. Okay, let me jump back to where I was there a second ago. So in my hometown, just outside of my hometown, they are building the Canadian headquarters for Scientology, the Canadian Scientology headquarters. It is going to be just as elaborate and as wow cool as that place in Florida. That's what I've heard. And so what I want to know from the great-grandson of L. Ron Hubbard is, should I talk to my local town council and get them to protest this?
Should you protest it? If anything, I don't know that you should necessarily tell anybody to protest anything as much as they need to be aware of what it actually entails. I mean, if they understand that there's going to be an aggressive recruitment strategy, that there's going to be people flown in who are going to be taking this top secret knowledge, if they're aware of Scientology's true history, I just think that people need to be aware of what it entails.
But
when Scientology moved into Clearwater, Florida, they were not honest about who they were or their intentions or any of that. The mayor and private investigators and the newspapers had to discover that, and it took some time because they moved in under a false name and bought all this real estate under false names. And so there's been a whole like aspect of that, of them being just completely dodgy in terms of their true intentions and motivations. I think people just need to be aware of what they're about. They're a religion and cult that survives in mystery. That's the whole point.
Yeah, but hold on. You know, surviving in mystery, the mystery thing I don't give a holy grunt about. That's their sort of tantalating hook for the whole thing. You know, ooh, there's right. mystery. You know, it's like some of the reasons the guys join the Masons or the I don't know, any of the other, you know, secret little clubs that are out there. You know, because right. there's some kids that still haven't grown up and they love clubs with secrets. So that's, you know, whatever. I don't really care about that. But if they're going to, and surely, and I keep saying surely, I don't know who this person is. Surely they're not going to do a heavy recruitment strategy in the same area where the headquarters is, where they need to get along with the local government quite well. Surely they won't do that because that'll raise the flags, I would think. Anyway. Okay. Let me just ask you about your favorite tattoo because you are one tatted dude. Yeah, because you have the Scientology symbol on your right arm, do you not?
Right, that's correct. Yeah,
is it
that's basically in stone on most of their buildings.
Yeah, is it tweaked in such a way that is sort of, you know, you've made it a little tweak to it so that you can, it's sort of a screw you thing, or did you really tat the legit Scientology symbol on your right arm?
No, it's pretty dead on. I got it after I came back from Clearwater, Florida. I realized that if I was going to encounter Scientologists in the future, that there was a statement that needed to be made in terms of that it was part of me as well.
Yeah.
And that it was basically born into me, not the theology, but the history of itself, the legacy of itself was part of me, whether I wanted to ignore it or not.
Yeah.
And at that point, I was already locked into it. There wasn't any escape at that point, and they already knew where I lived. They could already come after me. But it was also a reminder to myself of what happens when artists go wrong. So, I mean, Elron could have done a lot of things with his life. You know, I mean, the Scientology tattoo is balanced by on my other arm with a symbol for the Zodiac serial killer, who was a serial killer who terrorized the hometown of mine, Vallejo of Venetia, in the late 60s, early 70s, of course. And he's basically like a Spider-Man supervillain. And to me, it was at that point in my life, there was a feeling of having a sense of choice that we all are, at least I am, all in the middle between a god and a killer. And they're both individuals, I felt, that had taken their intelligence and taken their powers and had completely gone the wrong way with them. Hmm. You know, someone who basically was murdering for someone for a desperate plea for fame, and then somebody else would use their charisma and their intelligence to basically subjugate people to their will for money and for power.
Right.
And I felt that as an artist and as a writer that you're able to use some of those same skill sets in a way. I mean, really, what's the difference between a cult leader and your average performer or rock star? Use some of those same skill sets, but you have to use them in a way that's conscious and yep. is ideally bringing something better to the world than just your own selfish campaign.
Jamie, what was the movie that I saw? Was it last year at the TIFF, Toronto International Film Festival? There was a movie that was sort of based on Elron's life, although it wasn't based on Elron's life, and probably they made it that way or marketed it that way so they didn't get sued or attacked. Do you know what one I'm talking about?
I'm talking about The Master.
Yes, The Master, that's right. Did you see that?
I did, actually.
And what did you think?
I am a larger fan of Mr. Anderson's previous films, but I think the acting in it is phenomenal. I think that's indisputable, and Joaquin Phoenix and Philip Seymour Hoffman, and I mean, it's very directly about Scientology. I mean, they have a lot of references to it's the same timeline as basically like the timeline of after Dynamics had come out and shortly before Scientology had completely taken over and emerged as its sort of own religion in a way. My grandfather makes an appearance as a character in the actual film itself. And I mean, the film just kind of left in a very, it ended in a very ambiguous sort of note, which I'm okay with. I didn't feel like it needed to take a stance against Scientology in any way. It was more of a character study than anything. I thought it was a fascinating watch, but ultimately didn't leave me with any kind of momentous, like, turn or opinion about it at all.
All right. What if it had, maybe Tom Cruise was in it? What about that? That would have made it
well,
better.
I think it's kind of amazing that Tom Cruise was in one of Paul Thomas Anderson's films as basically a pathologically lying con man who has faked his own past. And then in Magnolia, I mean, it's very much an Elron-type character. It's someone who comes out and they fabricate their history and then they kind of manipulate you into buying their course because if they themselves are some sort of, you know, rogue rock star, and then they're exposed for their past in the film.
Yeah.
And then for the irony of that, to have the same director and writer show that kind of script to Tom Cruise and make sure that he was okay with it before they did it, I think in some way just kind of sharpened, it took away the barbs that could have been possible in a film like
right.
that.
Right. So one sort of concise comment, if you had, you know, Tom and Christy and John, you had a captive audience, you know, let's say I kidnapped them, handcuffed them, and took them to your living room, and you had them for 5 minutes. Well, not 5 minutes. If you had them for 30 seconds, what would you say directly to Tom, Christy, and John?
I would say that you've been sold an amazing and intricate magic trick, but there's better tricks out there and there's better magicians. But we can admire the man for his shadow play. We can admire him for his ingenuity and his audacity. But Elron was just another grifter. He was just another storyteller. And the fact was that you took his fiction as fact. And as people who are creators of stories and who are actors themselves, you've just been puppeteered by another writer.
And you would, and let me just make this clear, Jamie, you would say the same thing about Jesus.
I would say the same thing about Jesus. No, I would not say the same thing about Jesus. Jesus, you cannot argue with L. Ron Hubbard. Christianity is an entirely different story.
No, and, but you would say that he would be a puppet master, and you've, you know, and he had this great magic show, and you've taken it further.
Jesus didn't write anything. You could say that the Nicene Council was Christianity is much more of systemic. It is a systemic way to societally control people. And it's by taking a tribal mythology and then institutionalizing it in a way that creates societal control. And it's been distorted. I mean, the Bible is basically just a historical mixtape. And you've taken that and used it to basically rewrite and rewire history and also, you know, subjugate women in the process and also change the entire worldview to be entirely male-centric with no female presence or force to worship or give any kind of, you know, sacred belief to at all. Hmm. And that it's an apocalyptic cult.
So which is scarier, Scientology or Christianity? Or are they equal?
Christianity, because they're the ones running the world.
Okay. All right. Final question, because we got to go to DJ Tanner from Full House. That's changing gears. do you? Well, it could have been Kirk, right? It could have been worse. Could have been Kirk. Which is worse? Speaking of worse, which is worse for you? Which has been worse for you, Jamie DeWolf? Growing up with L. Ron Hubbard as a great grandfather, or growing up as a red-haired individual?
They're unfortunately synonymous, but there's some girls out there who are ginger fetishists, and God bless them.
Yeah, gotta love a ginger. Listen, Jamie, great to chat with you. It was as fascinating as I hoped it would be, and you are quite a pontificator. I wish you the best in your future endeavors, and may the force be with you.
Thank you, guys.
All right. Take care, Jamie. Bye-bye. So much more coming up on The Drew Marshall Show. Hey, folks, I want to tell you about The Drew Marshall Show 1250 special. You ready for this? For $12.50, that's right, only $12.50, we'll mention your organization's name, website, and a brief description. Did you catch that? During each show, we'll read out your organization's name, website, and a brief description for only $12.50. Now, obviously, there's no point in doing that only once during a four-hour show, so we'll read your advertisement four times per show for an entire month, and each time we do it, it'll only cost you $12.50. It's kind of like putting an advertisement up on every church bulletin in the GTA, except you don't have to get permission from that grumpy old lady at the front desk. Now look, because there are limited spots available for our 1250 special, why don't you call us right now, toll-free, on 877-JOY-1250. Now sure, we're right in the middle of things here in the show, but if you call us right now, toll-free, on 877-JOY-1250, we'll take your name and number and call you back on Monday to sign up for the Drew Marshall Show 1250 special. This is nuts. Are you sure we want to do this? How am I supposed to make any money?